Preston and Steve Fun Size.
Well, who could have ever foreseen that Gene Simmons putting ice cubes in his cereal would wind up with us having Lenny Dykstra in our studio? But it came to pass. And we welcome Lenny to our studio this morning.
I got to say that news is just like... That was unbelievable. I'm sexually aroused. You know?
I mean, wow.
In the traffic.
That's all it took, impressive. And then you open up with the Stones, right?
Like, yeah.
So I'm going to give some inside info that, like, no one knows.
Please.
So when we played baseball, like, in the Phillies, we had to have a, like, when we did, like, blow.
Yeah.
We couldn't call it, like, who's got the blow. So we made up, like, I came up with it, and I said... Let's call it Keith Richards, because he looks like a line of blow.
So there's the nickname for
it's legendary around the National League now. Like, Richards got the greatest out hits in there now. It was like, anyways, thought I'd throw that in there.
So that was the code word you guys used for Coke.
Yeah, it's kind of tough around the cage to say who's got the blow.
Right.
So, hey, is Richards in the house?
Right.
That's when I was a lot younger, though. A lot younger.
I had friends that used butter was the word.
Butter was the word?
Everybody comes up with that with a name for, you know, whatever illegal substance you might be throwing around. But Keith Richards, I like
that. That is cool.
Richards, yeah. And the thing is, because he's cool without trying to be cool, you know?
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
I was reading about, you know, Lenny and doing some of the research once we learned you were going to be on the show. And obviously, you know, we've had some Twitter action back and forth. I think the last thing that we had that came up on our radar was when the dentures at the restaurant, and we're like, what in the F? And then he's rooting around in the garbage. And then we heard there were $80,000.
Yeah, look at him, man.
They're damn good.
Well, the thing is, it took 4 years to get them done because I had to have bone marrow redone. So it was a guy in South Dakota that did Sioux Falls in South Dakota. Or
okay.
North Dakota? Okay,
South Dakota.
He did Doc Gooden's too. He's just a huge fan. But I had to go in, and it was such a process. And then the fact that, like, I have, like, they're not dentures; they're implants.
Okay. So are they locked now?
They're locked.
Okay.
Yeah. But I unlock them for when I do my work. You know.
Later. Okay.
We'll get that later. But so I'm a man of like many
talents. We've heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you found them in the dumpster?
Oh yeah, and I wasn't leaving until I got them, and there was some other guy who took some credits, some guy with a weird twinkle toes or something.
Like a wrestler.
Yeah, but he was there 2 seconds. I dove in there. I went through food. I started eating some of it, actually. But then when I found my teeth, it was like I found gold, man.
Yeah.
So they're back in. Look, perfect.
They look great.
You were at a Jersey Mike's. You finished your meal. You'd put your dentures on a napkin, and you'd done something. Implants.
Because my guy in Sioux Falls would kill me.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you accidentally throw them out. So you go, but it took about 9 hours, right, before you found them?
See, what happened was like, sometimes if I eat something, again, I think Jersey Mike's got mad because I said, like, the bread was kind of hard. But if something's hard, I don't want to, like, disrupt them. So I just kind of take them out and I put them to the side. But, you know, and then, like, I forgot and it was closing time. So I left and I said, my teeth. Where's my teeth?
Yeah.
And so then I go back to the store, they're closed, and I say, dude, my teeth, they're in there. I got to get my teeth. And they said, they're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
So I said, all the trash is out. And they said, wait a second. I said, which is the last trash can at Bunt Dumpster is in? They showed it to me. I just dove head first. I dove into second base. And I just started grinding, finally got it. It was like finding a hidden treasure, you know?
Well, 80, and we thought, no, there's no way. And then people started to call in and back you up and say, yeah, if you get a really well done.
There was so much work involved.
So much work.
Because there was not enough bone, see? So he had to build up bone. And you know, so I did all that on ibuprofen, you know, because opiates are like the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just grinded it out.
Yeah, prosthetics of any type are made specifically for the individual, and they're really expensive. And I can understand why you were good. It was a diehard situation.
Let's call it like it is. I mean, I didn't have the money to pay for that. This guy was such a great guy. He did Doc Gooden's teeth, too.
Yeah.
He didn't leave that gold thing in there, though.
No.
Doc did a lot of Richards back in the 80s, didn't he?
The doc knows Keith well.
Yeah, I was looking at a picture of you. So, Lenny, I became a fan when you were playing on the Mets. I was up in New York. And I remember that whole that team and the whole vibe. And then I was always also a fan of the Phils. So your trajectory has been one that's been very, very cool. But you know, I'm looking at House of Nails, the book you wrote came out in 2016, and I'm thinking you have enough material for another book at this point.
Yeah.
Are you? Because you are, as they say, a colorful character. People, you know, people are gravitate to you because you have these stories. Are you thinking of another book?
Or you can say it. People either love me or hate me.
Yeah.
And that's like, look, the bottom line is I tell the truth, and like a lot of people don't like to hear the truth, but I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so what am I doing in Philly right now? I'm here to do commercials for Martino Signs.
Okay. What is this?
You're wearing the hat.
Yeah, Martino Signs. So I'm a spokesman for them. So we're out there doing commercials. So then the Eagles game, and then I did the, went in the, you know, for the pregame and
the tailgate.
Oh man, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy, right?
It's insane.
So you were out there promoting the company,
but then just dealing with the fans. You know, the fans. I'm a man of the people, man. The fans in Philadelphia. Look. The Philadelphia season in 1993, to me, again, I think fans will back this up, was still the most exciting season in the history of Philadelphia baseball. Because we went from last to first, okay? Mm. And then we're all drug-fueled and like, nobody wanted to come to a bet, you know?
Yeah.
And then you have these fans that are crazy, that are just like people are scared to death of, you know? So
when you're greeted, like when you're out and about here, and I mean, do you feel the love?
I do. Yeah. I don't feel from the Phillies, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Because I think that, like, one of the owners found out that I tagged his daughter.
Oh, my God. So, jeez. Oh.
So, like, the real reason I'm on the Wall of Fame isn't. So, like, it was kind of a bad move, but that's what happened. I mean, what can I say? But see.
You can say more.
So were you guys playing hide-and-go-seek tag or freeze tag?
I'm just, you know, it's just I love hearing those words. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah.
Holy
jeez.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Lenny, I spoke with you on the phone on Friday. And we put that up as a fun-sized podcast. And when I was talking with you on the phone, it sounded like there were women in bed with you on Friday night. Do you remember Friday morning and chatting?
Yeah, I couldn't shake her. Yeah,
you couldn't shake her.
Yeah,
but it was just one person because I couldn't tell.
Maybe two. But the thing is, I don't ever let them stay. See, and this one tried to stay, and I said, "Listen, there's a door over there. You see, and there's a handle. You turn it left, okay? And you follow the signs, okay? And the exit down. Then, but she wouldn't leave, and I'm on the air with you." So I like said, get in the bathroom, remember?
Yeah.
Anyways, we got past that. Let's move on to like about like the cheap shot that our boy put on Carson Wentz, you know.
Oh.
Was a rough deal, but this is a rock and roll station, man. You guys talk about everything.
We talk about everything. Yeah. So let me ask you, so with that and with you talk about the sports, we talk about the Phils and the Mets. You were saying in one of the interviews I was reading about you that the Mets it was a little bit more on the up and up, but you hardcore partied with the Phils, and you also talked about doing steroids, and how that you looked at that point when you were doing them to preserve your job because everyone was doing it. Do you have any regrets of doing steroids now, or was it you had to do it to be where you were?
That's actually a great question because, and again, here comes the truth. So in 89, like I told the Mets, I need to play every day because if you don't play every day, you're not going to get paid. So they wouldn't play. Davey Johnson wouldn't play me every day. So we happened to be in Philly, okay, and like a right-handed pitcher was pitching. So two at bats into the game, Davey says, "You're done. That's enough." I said, "Like what the you know?
Yeah,
are you
yeah.
Kidding
yeah.
me?" So then I go up in the locker room and I hear Harry the K, the great Harry Callis, unbelievable. I hear him say, "A lot of action here at the vet today," and initials are LD. So I said to myself, "I just got traded." So then I'm sitting in my locker after the game. I'm sitting in my little stool. I wait for the tap. I get the tap, and they say, "Davey wants to see you in his office." So I go in there, and Davey says, "Well, you know, Davey, by the way, he was best friends with Jack, you know, as in Daniels." Everyone says he was a player's coach, manager. Of course he was. He's always hung over in his office.
All right.
But I'm in there, and there's Joe McElvain, the general manager, and Davey. And he says, "Look, we want to thank you for helping us win a World Series. We just traded you to the Phillies." And I said, "Wait, the team in the other dugout?" what, do I meet him at home plate? Like, it was so weird.
I remember when that happened.
It was so weird, but I was so
happy.
Juan
Samuel, right? The Phil's traded Juan Samuel, I think, for you?
Yeah. It was a brutal trade. But for me, it was a great trade because, so, like, with the Mets, I was a young guy, and, like, I never saw a line of Coke. I never saw a good, and I had beer. That's it. I mean, I didn't even drink a beer until I got to the big leagues. But then I made up for it later. But what I'm saying is, so when I got to the Phillies in 89, I started playing every day. So I'm a small guy. I'm 5'9". So I didn't forget how to play baseball. I just wore down.
It took its – so – and you were describing, and I was – and you know, I started reading some of the passages out of the book, too. Because we can't – listen, yeah. we see you out on the field. We see these athletes. And yeah. you're describing a level of wear and tear
yeah.
that we don't understand.
See, so I was so ahead of the curve. See, remember, it wasn't illegal then either. So in 89, yeah. the general manager – because I went and I came out of the gates. I'm in 320. I timbered, you know, down to way down. So general manager Lee Thomas says, look, we're going to give you 1990. You're going to lead off every day. You're going to have a look at the lineup. So I'm in Mississippi with my ex-wife, and like, people live there, by the way. So literally, this is how it went down. I literally just went into the Yellow Pages, and I pulled up some hillbilly doctor, and I didn't even know what he was going to give me. I went to him, and I told him the facts. I said, look, 1990 is going to determine whether I become a multimillionaire or I have to get a real job.
Yeah.
So here's what I need. I don't need a pill or a drug to make me play baseball better. I know how to do that. I need something that's going to keep my weight on so I can stay strong for 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, baseball is the most grueling schedule in sports, okay? Yeah. So that being said, I didn't know what he's going to give me. He writes a prescription. I go get in line in Rite Aid, you know. They fill it, and he says, come back, and I'll show you how to do it. And I come back to his office. He's got a harpoon waiting for me like this, and it's Decadurabolin, okay? Because remember...
So is that a growth hormone?
No, that's steroids. That's a steroid. Then as I became a chemist later, we mixed all that stuff in. But so remember, I had to do this because I physically wasn't capable of withholding. I couldn't hold up for 6 months. So that I did that for my family to make money because, like I said, I don't need something that could, you know, make me play baseball. I knew how to do that. And it wasn't a coincidence that I ended up hitting 325 that year.
Right, right.
Okay, I walked up to the plate. I had a 15-inch, you know what, because I knew that they knew that I was, like, on point. You know what I mean?
So, but, and this is the point, though, to like, and hearing about it and talking about, you know, there's a documentary, I forget the name, in case I know you saw it as well, where this guy's talking about steroids and about, so he's a competitive bodybuilder and his brother's a bodybuilder doing steroids, and they're both taking two different angles on it. But the truth of the matter is, and the guy even makes the point in the documentary about people love to see these incredible home runs and they love to see this incredible level of performance. So, yeah. You know, and at that point for you to remain competitive.
See, my I was ahead of the curve.
I'm surprised myself that I see that point.
Yeah, but it didn't get till later. And I told the commissioner, I told baseball, listen, I said, they asked me about, because I did some work for them, you know, and they're asking me about, like, you know, marijuana and cocaine and this. I said, no, you got it all wrong. I said, steroids is your problem. If you don't take care of that, it's going to be a problem that's going to just be out of control. Because anytime money's involved, anytime you can make more money, okay, people are going to make decisions they wouldn't normally make. And so if the guy next to you is doing it, okay, and he's going to get paid $30 million, what are you going to do? Say, I'm going to be a good guy. You know that? And I'm not going to do it. And I'll go get a real job and make $60,000 and, like, be miserable.
Right.
I'm a lifelong Phillies fan, Lenny. I love that 93 team. I was 18 at the time. We went to a lot of games at the Vet that summer. Who on the team was not doing drugs?
There's a lot of them. I mean, they weren't allowed at any of my parties. You know, So I never stayed at the team hotel, okay? Yeah, so like I got smarter as I got older. So what I did is I had the party brought to my suite. So I'd have, like, my guys that work for me, you know. And so when I got done playing, everything was set up and ready. That's why they all started hating Mitch Williams, because he would delay the game so long. Like, the party wouldn't get started till late. But, like, you know, a lot of guys weren't doing drugs. I mean, you know, you had your core group. I'm sure you know who they are, but... I mean, Eisenreich was doing some, but a different kind of, you know, like for his Tourette's. But
so, Danny Jackson, drugs?
No, I think he just drank, and he drank hard. Mulholland, no drugs. Chile, no drugs. Milt Thompson, no drugs.
And Cavilla.
Maybe a few.
I mean, this is all speculation.
Well, because remember, at that point, I became like a chemist. So, like, people needed a script fill. These came to me.
Mm. You know? So right now, what do you think the nature of the sport is now? Have they done a fairly successful job of eliminating that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, there's no drugs in baseball. Now, you might have a fringe guy that is like on his way out, and he's got nothing to lose. But what that tells you, though, is how in the heck does Major League Baseball players break and shatter the single-season home run record on no drugs? Very simple. Major League Baseball, they want the ball to fly out there, they make it harder. I mean, they take the seams down, okay?
Right.
So when you take the seams down, the ball travels, okay? So they can, like, turn the sun, like, turn one into warmer, turn warm water. Mm. So they control that, see? So it's like an airplane. When an airplane lands, you know, the flaps come down.
Right.
But see, with no seams, the ball just, they're like rocket ships, you know?
Hey, real quick, I just want to tell you guys. So you see this picture that's up in our studio?
Yes.
See the two ball boys in the first row? The guy on the left was my boyfriend, and he used to travel with the team. And, I mean, he never told me any stories about you guys, but I'm just wondering if he ever made it into one of your parties.
Wait. Better than that, he made it into Showtime. So, like, the bad boys, I used to let him get in the closet, you know, and they used to watch me do my service, you know? And sometimes they'd make noise, and I'd say, "What you guys? What the? You know?" But that's the kind of player I was, a team player.
Right.
You know? Even the bat boys guys about this.
To check with him.
You're a giver. So reconnect. You're a giver. You want people to appreciate.
By the way, that's an absolute true story.
Is it the clubhouse?
The club is when they have to go on the road, so they couldn't wait to go on the road, man.
Yeah.
Because I'd say, "Okay, listen, man, get in there, get in that closet, but don't say anything." Okay.
Like in the hotel? In the hotel suite?
Yeah.
Or,
okay. Yeah. And so, you know, I call it Showtime. And, you know, I'm a normal. I'm a missionary, man. I'm not into any crazy stuff. I mean, like, no chandelier.
A missionary, man. Okay. All right.
Let me ask you, Lenny, because you had a friendship with Charlie Sheen. And Charlie Sheen has, you know, his legendary partier and all that stuff. Yeah. And you said you got into his house, and he had, like, a state-of-the-art, like, drug den. Describe what he had.
Well, Charlie Sheen, by the way, the biggest and the most, the biggest meltdown in the history of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it was all over one reason, okay? Charlie Sheen's gay, okay? And Charlie Sheen could not live with that, okay? The reason why he was doing whatever he was doing for 10 days straight, okay, was because he had to do that to get to that place. So I had Charlie out a year before that he was forced to go out. And his people, he wanted to go out. He's being extorted. He's broke now. He's being extorted. It's one of the saddest and most difficult things I've ever been involved with. I was there every day with him.
So it's your belief that Charlie Sheen is gay?
No, it's not my belief. Come on, dude. I've seen the videos. It's like, you got to look left, bro. I don't believe it. I mean, got HIV.
So he was a fan of yours.
See, I never knew any of this. He did this on his own.
Huh.
See, this is his own world here. But see, when he'd get locked up in that for 10 days, everyone was afraid to go help him. So, because they were afraid that he'd fire him. So I never took a dime from him. I was his real friend. So they'd call me and I'd go up and I'd like say, and what happened on your story there is when I got in that room, I said, to break the ice, I said, Charlie, and this is before I know about all the darkness.
Right.
I said, I got to tell you, man, if you're going to smoke crack, this is the best crack room I've ever seen.
So you said it was like behind like the classic revolving book.
Alfred Hitchcock. So like the fiance, her name was Scottine Sheen at the time.
Right.
He made her change her name. And the first hint there, she was a porno star. Because remember, Charlie used to say, they're best because I can pay him and tell him when to come, tell him when to leave.
Yeah.
Now he's got one as a fiance. But, When she called me up, she said, you got to come help. Charlie's been 10 days. Da, da, da. And I said, okay, meet me at the Beverly Glen thing, and I'll go get me through the gates, and I'll take care of it. She said, you'll never find it. I said, what? I said, I've been there for...
You've been to the house before.
Thousands of
times. Yeah, yeah.
She said, no, he built a different special room. I said, okay.
Like a hidden room.
Yeah, so we get up the stairs. First, I go through the Israeli, hit squad, security, which is really an extension of his drug dealers. And so we get up there, and she literally takes a picture and moves it to the side, puts her hand on a thing, puts some numbers on, and his bookcase opens. It was like right out of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, or like a James Bond layer.
The room was off the chart. I mean, it was awesome. But then I said, Charlie, is this your life? Is this it, man?
Right, right.
Is this it? I said, like, what are you doing? You're 50 years old. You've been here 10 days. Remember that show you own? You're, like, you got to be there Monday.
Right.
You know? Because the big joke on his show was, in anger management, was, no, Charlie will be here. He'll be here at 11. He'll be here at 12. No, he'll be here. You know, whole, so
yeah,
it just all got bad. And,
yeah.
And like I said, but sober, Charlie's probably one of the smartest, greatest guys I've ever met. Mm-hmm. You know? She's had that dark side, and that dark side, it wasn't, well, she pitched black, you know?
Wow.
So it's just, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy.
So you did your, you know, obviously you have your demons. You're very candid about it in the book, and you have stuff that you wrestle with all the time.
That's not one of them, though.
Yeah.
If somebody put something in my, you know, well, you're going to have to kill me.
Right, right. Well, you did 2.5. What'd you do? Was it 2.5 years in prison?
Yeah, they put me in the cooler, you know, for a couple years, you know, and that's when I had to, either say, okay, you can pout and, like, you know, feel sorry for yourself, or you can fight through it. And then I fought through it.
To that point, I remember reading the story, and I wanted to ask about this, because you got your ass kicked in jail, and there was a lawsuit, right, against the guards?
Well, yeah, so L.A. County Jail is known as the biggest, and it's the largest in the country. The FBI did an investigation, put 23 of them in prison. So what there was there, it was like institutionalized, where they had to beat up like inmates. So when I went in there, and like, first of all, they put me on like the worst row, like a hit squad leader and killers, killers. But I wasn't there with that one dude that Michael Jackson, they said he killed the doctor.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay, a doctor.
The London dude.
Right, you know? Yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, him. Yeah. And he was next to me, and I said, what happened to good old Ambien, dude? Like,
come on. Propofol is what
they're using. Yeah, so he told me what happened. He said, look, what is that guy's name, man? But anyways.
Conrad Murray?
Yeah, Conrad Murray. Yeah,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Conrad Murray.
So you're not with Conrad Murray.
He's there for a while next to me, and I said, what happened? He said, I did my normal thing. He said, then he wanted more. So he's self-medicated, and, you know, with the anesthesia, too much, you know, the lights go out. And luckily they did for a lot of kids, if you know what I mean.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, because one thing I won't accept is, like somebody touching kids or a man putting hands on a woman. That's just not acceptable.
Well, so you're in there, and how badly did you get beaten?
Were you
like a target? Or
yeah, no. The guy was, like, they're bullies. You know, one guy was whistling, take me out to the ball game, one, like, I said, hey, bro, not tonight, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it went from nails to thumbtacks, and, like, so finally the guy, we had words, and the next thing I know, they're coming in, and I'm back, like, you know, Duke, and, like, it took 7 of them to take me out of there. That lawsuit's still going on. In fact, they just offered me a big settlement, which I'm not going to take, and it's going to go to a trial here pretty quick.
Okay. Because I was looking at some of the pictures. I mean, you got throttled.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, it's... I mean, I fought them hard, you know. It took a lot to drag me out of there.
So why not take a settlement? You want to see them pay for,
The settlement's too low.
Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you're, it's so funny in my life. Like, the same people that put me in prison, the FBI, meaning, is the same people that's going to make me millions for this lawsuit. But, like, when I got indicted, like, remember, you're talking about a guy that's, like, paid $20 million in taxes and never committed... When they said, like, you're being indicted, I said, what's that? And, like, when they showed me, it said, the United States of America versus Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
Yeah.
It's almost laughable, you know? I mean, the feds just do what they want to do. And, by the way, I didn't want that war, okay? I mean, that's a much complicated, deeper story than it appears on the outside.
Yeah.
I mean, but what it is what it is. I don't... So that's why my book was so well-received, and why people... It was a bestseller, because I didn't say poor me. I didn't say, you know, they did this to me. They did, like, the legal stuff. I said,
not like even some of your biggest critics were saying you were unabashedly saying what it is.
So, yeah, so and that, I said, like,
and if there's not much more you can say if you're saying, okay, I know people love me or hate me, and here's what I am.
Unlike Ron Darling, okay? Ron Darling, who made up lies in his book, and it's been proven. I'm in a lawsuit with him, too, and, like, Why would he pick me as an enemy?
He claimed you'd made racist comments. Was that it?
Or he claimed it. Yeah. And the problem with that is here comes Daryl Strawberry. Here comes Kevin Mitchell.
Yeah.
Here comes Doc Gooden. Here comes Wally Backman. Oil can boy. So
coming to your
so,
defense.
So Darling, but like, why would he pick me as an enemy? Like,
right.
I'm your worst nightmare. I'm the last guy you want as an enemy. Okay. So I'm not done with him by a long shot. That's going on. You're
going
to see.
Still going on?
It's going on in a big way. And by the way, because what he did is like, you cross a line there when you start talking about, like, that's very sensitive stuff, okay?
Yeah.
And I wasn't the only one who took shots at Gary Carter, Bob Murphy. So anyways, but on my book, like the legal stuff, instead of like blaming, like, I just said, look, here are the facts, you be the judge.
So Preston and I were talking earlier this morning about, you know, and I say you take ownership of some stuff, and you say that you need to know the rest of the story about the other stuff. If you, I mean, where you are career wise now, and where everything's going, you showed that you had some business savvy. What's in the future for you?
Yeah, I mean, I still do have business savvy. I mean, look, I filed in 2011, and that's when 2008 came, when the world was ended, and they converted me to a 2007 like 2 weeks into the 2011. So like my. They just burned down everything I had. But so where I'm at now is I'm making signs for Martino.
No. You actually work at the company.
No, it's cool. We were doing some commercials. But no, I have a lot of things going on now. I mean, like, besides, I do have a few clients in Beverly Hills, you know, that keep the gas flow going, you know. I mean, they're elderly people. But see, I thought God put me on the earth to entertain people on the baseball field. I was pretty good at that. But that wasn't my calling. See, he put me on here to help women.
To help women?
How are you helping women?
I'm a giver.
He's helping them reach climax, Kat.
Yes. Well, it's not so much that because they're a little old. Like, I mean, so it's like it's a lot of look left type deal. But like, you know, I just that's look what I do. Left. I am a giver.
And so. The teeth come out when that happens.
Absolutely.
Right?
All right, Lenny. So tell me, there's someone that has to have come to you with a biopic, a movie based on your life. Has anyone come to you to option your life for
it? Yeah, a lot of. In fact, the guy that did with Leonard DiCaprio played in
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, Terrence Winters, who did Sopranos and everything else.
He came to you for this.
He was awesome. Yeah, but my movie was tied up with Gil Netter and John Lee Hancock, and they never got it to market. So it's with another group now that is trying to put it, because it's a great story because it covers everything. I mean, the book's about a baseball player, but not about baseball per se.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it talks about, like, De Niro when I'm in, like, St. Bart's, and he's stealing all, he's like, he didn't even know who I was, but, like, we're at the two suites, and he sees all my, you know, friends helicoptering in. I got him coming night, and like he can't take it anymore. He says to me, like, I got a daiquiris during the day, and he says, hey, what is that? And like, you know where he's going. And I said, that's a daiquiri. And but anyways, and long story short, we end up in his bathroom, and Richard's Greatest Hits came out.
Oh my God.
And so me and Bobby D, he said, call me Bobby D. So remember, this is in my book. Don't think 30 lawyers didn't call me and fact check this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think they didn't, because you know, it was so funny. Then he'd be sending over $500 bottles of wine, and so.
Jeez.
So then I said, "Look, bro, if you want to hang out with Richard, he's better to hang out at night with. Yeah. So if you want to get on the program, it took me years to get down. You take an amphetamine during the day, because the amphetamine it's a more of a smooth like ride, and then you slowly descend. Then you have to have a Xanax around just to you know." Chip away if you need a little edgy. And then at night, you can bring out the greatest hits, okay? And you stick with that program. It's a trifecta. And you're good. So he stuck with it the whole time. And we're like, I'm getting ready to leave. He runs up to me. Hey, you got some more of that stuff? So 3 months later, I'm in Tribeca. And De Niro's there with his family. And so I said, I'm going to say hi to him. I'm with my friends. And I go up to say hi to him. He treats me like a Russian spy. And my friends say, what an idiot. What a bad, like... I said, what do you mean, idiot? What's he going to say? Hey, honey, remember him? He's the one that got me all the Richards and all the... I mean, so, you know...
Well, where are you now? Are you still doing the trifecta?
No, I'm too old for that. No, I'm too old. Like,
you're a grandfather.
Yeah, I mean, my son's married to Jamie Lynn Sigler, the actress from Sopranos. And
yeah.
I have a couple of grandkids and maybe some other kids. Like, but I mean, like, it's kind of hard to watch a game. It's like, God, there's another one.
Hey, Kathy just found out her grandfather was a very famous race car driver, and apparently he spread his seed all over the place.
She's finding out that this relative had no idea she had.
He's a breeder, you know?
He was definitely a breeder.
Yeah. What are you going to do? But, I mean, look, the thing about it is, in Philadelphia, like playing in Philadelphia, was like, for me, it was like an honor and a privilege to be able to play in New York and in Philadelphia, which are the greatest fans in the world. So when I still come to Philadelphia, no matter what Angelo Cataldi says or whatever, or what anybody says, or the fact the Phillies like owner got mad because I serviced his daughter. Doesn't matter. The fans remember, and that's what makes it so cool. You know.
So when you're on the street and people are coming up to you, you're getting a lot of love.
Yeah, always, man. Because I played hard, man. And so when the game would end, what I would do, I'd go in my locker and I'd sit there for 2 minutes. I'd say to myself, if I were a fan, would I have paid money to watch me play? That's how I judge myself.
Right. Lenny, I've got Phil's been on the hold for a long time. I'm just going to ask his question for him. Are you doing any appearances soon? Because there's people that want to meet you. Do you do public appearances?
Yeah, I do. No problem. You reach me 24/7 on Twitter. You know,
we found out how easy you are to access on Twitter because that's how we first got in touch with
you. I have my guy that helps me with Twitter won Jeopardy like 3 times. He's a genius, you know.
All right.
Because like Twitter, it's like right here, right now. You got to be on top of it. So
you have a genius running your Twitter account.
He's a genius. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't even answer a question on Jeopardy. He won it 3 times. So, yeah.
He was on Jeopardy? He won. He was a 3-time champion?
Yeah, his name's Adam Taxon. He's a big Philly guy.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's a lawyer. He, like, passed the bar in 5 states just because he wanted to.
Hey, where's home for you now? Where do you live?
I've been hanging out at that intersection, you know, heaven and hell.
No, heaven and hell.
Them two streets, they cross
every
night.
Yeah, that's where you are.
It's like South a cool Philly, place right? to hang out, you know?
I would love to see you, like, as sort of the guy who walks around when the Phils play, and you're, hey, we're meeting with the families and tell them.
Well, see, the funny thing about the Phillies is this. So here's what happened. I'm kind of the gift that keeps giving, okay?
Right.
So when we have the big year in 93, go to the World Series, I get a $30 million contract.
Right.
So what happens is I end up having, like, back surgery and, like, didn't get their money, like, out of it, okay? So when you get this kind of contract, they insure you. So Lloyd's of London does. They flew me all over the country. Basically, every part of my body was uninsurable except my back. So when it's time to retire, because my back and the brass is coming up, hey, you know, like your back. I said, dude, I got you. I got you.
Right.
So I do the press conference. It was a true thing. Back surgery took me out. I got the Phillies all $30 million back.
Huh?
Take him to the World Series and get their money back.
That's pretty wild.
You want me on your team? Trust me.
How much of the steroid abuse do you think contributed to the downfall of your body?
I don't think the steroid abuse did. I think the way I played did, and the vet. I mean, the vet was vicious, man. I'm telling you,
it was concrete.
Yeah, so like you picture yourself trying to stop on a dime there, and it's so hard, which is something like. I can't do anymore. It's get hard. But it's so painful. It's like humiliating. Like the first time it happens when you get the towel there and like, you know.
But back to the vet.
You got to peel and reveal and they laugh at you. That's the problem.
It's not good. It's not good.
That's the problem. So I'm always armed with you know what.
But the teeth come out, so you're ready to go.
Well, they don't know that. That's like a side move.
Yeah.
And so I also had this injury. I had this injury when I played football where I almost bit my tongue off, okay? I literally did. And I looked in the mirror, and, like, it was barely hanging there. And they rushed me to the hospital, and I got, like, 15 stitches in my tongue. So there's, like, a rivet in my tongue, too. So combine that without the teeth, and you got Picasso.
Listen, you're a cyborg sex machine.
I'm just a pleaser, but before Picasso can do his work, the canvas has got to be clean, you know?
I got a text that says, I feel like I need to take a shower after this interview.
Lenny, I don't know if this is legend or if this is not true, but I had heard that other center fielders in the league complained about center field because of the mound of, like...
Absolutely.
Okay, spit That's and grow. Okay.
You know why it's true? Because I didn't, like, if I saw the team, my teammates talking to the other team, I said, we're fighting.
Yeah.
Had a motto. We're going in their house, taking their money, and doing their women. Okay? So what I'm saying is, like, I wasn't voted the most hated player in the league 5 years in a row because, like I made their job easy. I made their job hard. Okay, and that's why they didn't like me.
Is there a part of you that wants to be that most beloved player that, you know, that everyone just goes, man, what a great ambassador of the game and so on
Not
and so
at
forth?
All.
Not at all.
No, I love hitting my home runs on the road. In fact, like when we played Atlanta, so remember, I let off, okay? So on the road, they couldn't start the game until I got in the box. So I was in complete control at that point. So we played Atlanta, Ted Turner and Jane Fonda would be sitting there. So I'd always take a wide, wide loop. And I'd stop right in front of Jane Fonda, and I'd say, I want to, you know what, right there.
Okay? Really?
Every time. Now, she'd look at me or looking through me, but Ted Turner was so goofy, he's looking all over the place. But that was a classic story, you know. And so my favorite home run I hit was in Atlanta to knock them out of the playoffs, you know. Mm-hmm. And which is, and again, kind of comparable to what happened to Carson Wentz from the cheap shot in the first inning, would be kind of comparable to, like, when I'm leading off, Greg Maddux throwing a pitch in my head, knocking me out of the playoffs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a rough deal yesterday. But I know I'm all over the map. But
No.
So that's kind of what I do.
It was weird that he was such a dominant pitcher because he looked like such a nerd.
Well, you know why? Because he pitched right. He played right. So
yeah.
If you play right, okay, like Tom Glavine, when I wanted to catch it and throw it back.
Yeah.
He's in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But because he didn't walk people and he played right, he let the percentages take over.
Who's the player you admire the most?
I mean, look, the best player to ever play the game, you can define him this way. Okay, the best player to ever play the game, Barry Bonds. The biggest, you know what, to ever play the game, Barry Bonds.
Mm.
Okay.
You finished second to him in 93, right, for MVP voting?
Yeah. I should have won that, though.
You should have won that.
If the MVP is supposed to be about winning, and, like, I mean, he had more home runs and all that stuff, but
but
I'm not mad, you know? I mean, look, for me, every day above ground is a good day.
Yeah.
You know, and I give people hope, okay? Especially, like Ray Hallard, like, older, never mind.
Beverly Hills.
Hang on a second. I have a three-time Jeopardy champion on the line. Adam, are you there?
Don't
go! Is this your guy?
No, that's not him.
No.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
We're losing you.
No, that's not him. That's another one of the guys that was at the tailgate last night, yesterday. I mean, that's something, man. Those guys are hardcore.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. I mean, like, I couldn't believe it. They're everywhere, and they're all, like, looks like they're all drinking the same thing.
They
go hard.
There's a lot, yeah. Did it remind you of your days of youth, or is it...
No, see, like, I was, like, controlled, dude. Like, so, like, I was kind of into, like, if it's prescribed and it's FDA approved, then I'm good. Like, I'm not doing nothing wrong.
Right.
Except till you get to 30 a day, and that's a problem.
Right, right.
But there's a doctor here in Philadelphia that actually saved my life. I mean, I was actually the first... second patient in the world to do a thing called rapid detox. So, you know, we have a huge opiate epidemic out there right now. And there's a doctor here named Dr. Jim Berman, who's the smartest, best, like, he saved my life. Because, like, I couldn't get off opiates. You know, when I was playing, like, I'd see my teammates drinking, like, 20 beers a game. And I told the trainer, I said, I can't do that. I lead off. I said, there's got to be something else. So he gives me one little white pill.
Was it Vicodin?
It's a Vicodin, a little milligram, 5 milligram. And, like, I take that, I have one drink, and, like, I thought I reinvented the wheel. I said, I got him again. I figured it out. I feel great. Now, there's nothing for free, as you know. So fast forward to, like, you know, 30 a day. But I couldn't get off, so I said to him, I can't live like this. There's got to be another way. And he says, there is, but it's risky. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, it's not here. It's in Israel. I said, Israel, this is 1990s, late 90s.
Right.
I said, isn't that where they're blowing people up every day? He says, yeah. And he says, well, there's something else. You'd be only the second patient in the world to do it. I said, the world? It's kind of a big place. Did the first one live? So then he said, and also it's $250,000. I can give it. I don't care about the money. And he says, it's too risky. Don't do it. I said, no, I'm doing it. So I took, you know, hired an Israeli security forces and took LL Airlines and went there. And It was actually like when I got annihilated on the way there. It was like the second time that I cried, meaning as soon as I landed, I said, take me to my doctor. And so this is Israel, too. And like I walk in his office, some dude with his feet up against the window smoking a cigarette, and he turns around, and it looks like he's got scars and like everything all over him. And I don't know, something happened to me. I broke down, and like the first time I cried was my mom wouldn't let me play in like a Little League game, so I had to have a fever or something. And the second time I cried was like in there because like if my daddy's spanking me, I used to go, "Hey, Dad, you done yet?"
Oh, well,
yeah. So, but I broke down. And I remember him coming over and he pinned me against the wall. And I still smell that Israeli cigarette. And he said, "I'm not going to let you die."
Wow.
And it was very powerful, man. Like so when I finally like came to and came out of it, like I went to the wailing wall. You know, instead of just like throwing it against the wall, I stopped and I got some clarity and said, like I'm alive. I'm free. And because that's a different kind of prison. Opiates. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't touched one since. That's a prison that I don't reckon anyone gets there. Whoever's been in that world knows the pain. You know?
And wow. So he did save your life.
He did.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
All right. Well, listen, Lenny, this has been a wild conversation.
Yeah.
I know we're just scratching the surface.
Sure.
So we'll have to talk to you again sometime in the near future.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you're just repping Martino Signs. I want to make sure.
Hey, Martino Signs, man. Look at the lid.
By the way, you got a Martino Signs hat on.
Yeah, and the commercials are on YouTube. And so, look, I'm also repping my skills, too, you know?
Yes, if anyone needs pleasure.
Also on Twitter.
Right. I mean,
the bottom line is, like, think about it, bro. Like, the teeth come out, the ribbon in the tongue. It's like...
A real home
what
run.
Else do you need?
Space Kathy, shuttle. Try to so contain you know, yourself.
Oh, my God. Well, he's such a giver.
I'm such a giver. I'm a giver.
You are.
I mean, I'm a nice guy. I wanted to give back. You know?
Lenny, there's a whole bunch of wealthy, like, socialites, and I'm sure along the main line,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man. I live in Villanova. Come on over.
Yeah, I lived there. No, I lived in the main line, too. I loved it. I lived in Devon, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
There you go. I think you could find some customers.
Yeah, on the way home from the game, I used to pull in the Wayne Hotel and, like, get lucky once in a while, you know? I was a bad boy, man.
Yeah, and it looks like you've completely reformed.
Yeah, well, just, I'm, you know what I am? I'm more, it's more...
About the people?
Yeah, I'm a man of the people. See, that's right. Good call. I'm a man of the people.
You're a man of the people.
Yeah, I'm a giver, you know?
Yeah, he's a giver. All right, thank you. Lenny Dykstra, guys. Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Man of the people. Awesome. Giver.
Thank you, man.
Get the whole Preston and Steve Show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.